Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
The Wise Man by Michelle Chenoweth. The bigger they are, the harder they fall. Finn Mitchell grew up in the shadow of his father, U.S. President Leif Mitchell. But now it's Finn's turn to shine as he becomes the newest member of the U.S. Supreme Court and takes part in a landmark abortion case that could reverse Roe v. Wade. In addition to his judicial prowess, Finn has accumulated a small fortune, is a brilliant, handsome charmer who women adore, and he owns an exclusive tourist island that houses a wildly successful virtual reality empire. The only problem, Finn's life is about to explode. His desire for more is daunting, yet he discovers you can't always get everything you want, even if you are one of the wisest, wealthiest, most attractive men on earth. And it might be too late for his soul to be saved. An epic contemporary novel inspired by the story of Solomon, the wise man dives deep into the question, what good will it be for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul?
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today, you have a special treat. We have two Michelles, Michelle Olson and Michelle Chenoweth. So welcome to my show.
Thank you, Sarah. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for having me. And it's fun to be back with you.
Now, one of the Michelles has written a book on called The Wise Man. So let's just talk a little bit about this book. So tell me about it.
Okay. What I write, this is my fifth novel out, are contemporary suspense novels that reimagine Old Testament stories in the Bible. And they're full of suspense and romance. And this one in particular reimagines the story of Solomon in the Bible. And it's very edgy. I call them edgy Christian fiction. It patterns the story in the Bible in a modern day way. And in The Wise Man, the main character becomes a Supreme Court justice who is hearing a case, a Supreme Court appeals case between two women who are fighting over custody of a baby that was born live out of a failed abortion. So the case looks at overturning Roe v. Wade and his struggle over all of that, because he ends up being the swing vote out of the nine judges. And I won't tell you too much, but it's very ripped from the headlines and follows the news. I mean, I God's timing, and here's this whole leak with the Supreme Court. I knew they were looking at the case, and I was thinking that the decision would come out end of June. That's what they were discussing. Now, who knows? But then the whole leak. So it's very, very timely, I hope. It also is based on Solomon in the fact that Solomon was a guy who was born from, David and Bathsheba, and he was very entitled, very wealthy. And in my book, he's the same. But he goes off the grid. He kind of falls from God in that he falls. In my book, the main character is Finn Mitchell. And it is a sequel from my book, The Peacemaker, which was based on David and Abigail. David then goes on to marry Bathsheba and have Solomon. So Finn Mitchell becomes a Supreme Court justice, and he falls in love with a woman of high rank in China, and she does not believe in God. So they think love will conquer that all, but he actually gives into some practices that aren't religious and ends up suffering the consequences. So there's a lot wrapped in, but it's very modern day.
Yeah, I love the way that you brought in a bunch of the different elements of the Solomon story, not just the infamous, divide the baby I'm a judge kind of thing, but also, you know, the fact that he started out as a very godly king asking for wisdom, and then he started marrying all these women from foreign places and allowing their religious practices to corrupt his faith, right? So I love how you kind of brought all that together in the book.
Yes, and the main message is, what good does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? And, you know, I think we all sometimes give in to some of our desires. He, in the book, also goes to own an island. He's very wealthy, and they have this whole virtual reality gaming system on the island for tourists. And that has its own set of evil in a way. And he goes off the grid away from God. And again, bad things happen. And I don't want to give too much away, but we all can relate to that. I can relate to that because I've had a really good upbringing. And I was very blessed and very privileged as a kid growing up, and then into my adult years even. And there are times when I've wanted more, like Solomon, and, you know, or wanted my way, wanted my will, wanted more. And sometimes that's, you know, we have to remember God has a plan, and we need to really stick close to his will instead of our own.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, that's one of the hardest things, because we're so selfish, aren't we? You know, our hearts want what our hearts want, and essentially we're like toddlers on the inside, you know, the little kids who are like, you know, they just melting down because they didn't get their popsicle when they, you know, and that kind of thing. But I often think when I see that, what happened with my own kids or one of our foster kids, I'm like, yeah, but that's me and my heart when I don't get what I think I deserve, right? You know, we just don't show it as much as adults because we have the nice veneer, you know.
But right. And as authors, we have a tendency, first of all, we're on our own a lot, you know, writing and editing and marketing. And, you know, when you're on your own, you get up in your head sometimes. And I know I'm like an overachiever. You know, I think most of us want our books to sell lots of copies and become New York Times bestsellers. Why not get made into movies? I've had all those dreams. And, you know, in so doing, I get very driven. And I, like, at first I just wrote to become rich and famous. And then I realized, and especially as a Christian author, I have to strive more for building the kingdom and making a difference, even if that's in one or two readers, you know, that get God's message. So I have to constantly remind myself of that, though, because I can be like Solomon and say, oh, I have to sell more copies, you know, more, and realize, you know, what the real purpose is.
Yeah. And I love that, Michelle, because it is such a temptation to, you know, I mean, I don't think it's bad. I'm going to back up. I don't think it's bad for us to want those things as authors, because we want our message in our books to get in the hands of readers. I mean, I want to bring my readers joy, and I want to show them something about God that they didn't understand, that they hadn't considered, that they maybe build their faith or maybe, you know. So, I mean, I think it's a good thing, but yeah, we all do. We want those because as writers, it's a validation that, hey, we're really writers when people buy it or they endorse it or they, you know, we win an award or X, Y, Z. But it is hard to have that self-talk to go, right, I am writing for an audience of one, God, ultimately. And I need to be happy if he chooses with this particular book to have a small audience, a medium, a big. I mean, we should be work hard, do the best we can, market, do all those things, but also ultimately just rest and go, okay, we've done what we can. Now it's up to God.
And this book in particular was a struggle for me in that you mentioned how we write for an audience of one, and I was really on the fence, like, you know, should I say it's Christian? Should I say it's you know, it falls on the, you know, pro-life side. He really does, the character really does struggle and with both sides. And I struggle myself, you know, I want to appeal to all readers, but somebody reminded me, you are writing for the one with capital O, and sometimes you just have to take a stand and put yourself out there. And so I was, the whole debate was over whether to promote that I got an endorsement from Kirk Cameron, the actor, who was the March for Life keynote this year. And, you know, I ended up putting it on the back book jacket. I was so excited to get it. He's a huge Christian movie star. And you know, everybody knows him from Growing Pains. Well, if you're around our age, but we won't say what that is. So, yeah, I struggled because I didn't want to turn anybody off. But I thought, no, you know, I had to lean in finally.
And I think that I think when we're true to ourselves that way, when we do go that extra bit and say, you know what, we're Christian authors, we're writing books that we hope please our Heavenly Father, right? Ultimately. And yeah, and we are going to, you know, and that's okay, because he's going to bring the readers that need to read that book. He's going to bring the readers that need to read my books. They're going to get it. They're going to read it, and people are going to get turned off, and people are going to say mean things or not read your book. I mean, that's okay. I really don't want them. They're not the right audience for it. Right.
Yes, so, but in the scheme of things, guess what? I got one unsubscribe from putting it out there about this endorsement. I also got one from Nancy Stafford, who's a Christian actress, and she was in Matlock, and we were scheduled to speak together. Then COVID kind of derailed that. But anyway, in the scheme of things, to that one, I got 100 that were, you know, very excited for me, very supportive, encouraging, and even started a prayer chain for the first time for one of my novels. I've had a launch team, but not a prayer team before. And I thought, wow, that is awesome.
Yes. Yeah, so you've written a couple more books, I think, since we last talked. And you said yes. Alice is your third book in a series, but it's not exactly your typical series. So why don't you tell me a little bit about how Being Alice fits in and what the whole series is about?
Sure. Well, I started with Being Ethel in a World That Loves Lucy, which is set in 1979 on Mackinac Island. And that's where we meet the main character, Piper Penn. So what happens in the next book, Being Dorothy in a World Longing for Home, is Dorothy takes front and Piper Penn becomes a background character, but still very integral to the story. So in this one, Being Alice in a World Lost in the Looking Glass, once again, Piper's still there, takes more of a backseat, and it becomes about Alice. And the first book is 1979, the second book is 1980, the third book is 1981, and I'm working on the fourth book, which will be 1982. So that's how I'm doing it. And you can read them. They are standalones. But what I like to say is, excuse me, it's richer if you read them in order, because you understand Piper's background, where she becomes a background character. But if you know where she came from the first book, that type of thing. But you can read them by themselves. And so I'm cognizant of that when I'm writing it, that this book has to stand alone, right? But it's also part of the series. So I don't know if that's normal. What do you think? Is that normal?
Well, I think it depends on what you want to do with the series, right? I mean, some like cozy mysteries, generally the main character, whatever's going on with the main character is really not resolved through and until later in the series, right? I mean, because it's like they have in the mystery, you learn a little more, and some of them are written like that. I like series that are written where the books are standalone, but some of the characters pop in. The one that I'm currently working on has that, where the first book, which is out now, The Dark Guest, has two characters who reappear in subsequent books.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you know, I write romantic suspense. It's not a huge giveaway that, you know, they end up together.
Yeah.
I mean, that is kind of the point of the whole thing. So
that's a dance, isn't it? With the readers. Some people want, it was a predictable ending, and some people want, and I on purpose did not do a predictable ending in Alice. And I didn't know if people would like that, because this ending is not predictable.
Right. And I don't think, I think with romantic suspense though, but we have several ways we can go about the ending, right? We can have a satisfying romantic ending and a totally surprising suspense ending.
Right.
You know, so the readers, I never want my readers to guess exactly where the story is going on the suspense mystery, who's behind this and why are they doing it kind of thing. And I want some suspense with, are they going to get together? How are they going to overcome their, you know, things, and that sort of suspenseful. But I do want to give my readers that satisfying couple together at the end. Big spoiler alert, readers, I'm sure everyone's shocked. That almost,
and I have to say, with Alice, there's satisfaction, but there's a twist, and I'll just leave it at that.
And that's because I think that, that's great though, Michelle, because haven't you read a book where you got to the end, you're like, that's how it ends, and like thrown it across the room. One is a paperback, not my Kindle.
Yeah. Good idea. And,
not going to throw the electronic one, but because I think our reader, that's the promise we give our readers as romantic suspense writers. I'm not writing a thriller where it's a totally different thing. If there's a romance in a thriller, I know it may or may not work out. But when we add that romantic suspense, romance in front of the suspense part, our readers are expecting some sort of satisfactory ending.
Yes, yes. And I think that's true of everything, because have you ever watched a series or something on Netflix or whatever, and it was so unsatisfactory that it's unsettling then. So it's that dance between sticking to a trope, being true to it, but being unique and original at the same time, which I think is the challenge for the writer. Definitely.
Yeah. And it is hard to, and then you have to add, to be true to the trope, what the readers expect when they pick it up, and we've labeled it romantic suspense, and also be true to the fact that this could really, this could really happen. This is real, real life, real human emotions, real stories, which gives it the subjective thing. And I'm sure you've experienced this too, Michelle. I had a reader say, well, because I wasn't really sure this, I didn't believe it. And I'm like, that's okay. I know not everyone's going to be along for the ride, because we're all different people. There's books that I have hated that other people have loved, because I'm like, okay, I figured it out in the first chapter. I was going, please don't let it be this person. Please don't let it be this person. And it's that person. I'm like, oh, it doesn't make sense to me. And I realize that's very subjective. So I don't mind it when readers say, I didn't really like, okay, good. You had a feeling. I'd rather them love it, hate it, but don't be lukewarm about it, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that new writers don't understand, is you kind of have to develop this pretty thick skin, because the people are going to love it. People are not going to love it. People are going to be lukewarm. They're just going to be all over the map about it. And you're like, well, it's kind of the same book that the person loved and the person hated. But so you do have to develop this thick skin. And at the end of the day, I absolutely have to like what I wrote, that I wrote it because I got a kick out of it. And in fact, in one of my being Alice, I have this character, Sister Mary Margaret, who has turned out to be a big fan favorite. And I had to bring her back in being Alice out of popular demand. She's really not in being Dorothy, but I really brought her back out of just people loving this character. And some of the things you learn about her being Alice sound preposterous, but I base them on something I know about in real life. And it did happen. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm like, at the time when I was writing, I'm like, people just kind of aren't going to believe some of this, but I'm like, but I know that this really happened to someone. So therefore I'm going with it.
Right. Right. And my, one of my books, Illusion of Love, it's based loosely on on something that happened to a friend of mine. And when I heard this story, you know, kind of as it was unfolding in various things, I was like, oh my goodness, I'm so taking that.
Yeah, exactly.
And I added my own twist to it to make it, you know, kind of thing. But when I tell people that who have read the book, they're like, really? I say the gist of it, and I'm not going to like, so give away the whole thing, but the gist of it is, yes, this really happened. And it's, you know, once people think about it, it's not too surprising, but you know, it does catch them off guard. So I think it's fun to take those real life things and put our own twist on it, right?
Yes. It's like that joke and all the mugs and everything is like, be careful or you'll end up in my novel kind of thing. It's like, it's kind of true.
Yeah. In news articles too.
Yes.
One of my love inspired suspense, my first one for there, it came an idea of this. There was a celebrity couple who weren't a couple anymore, but apparently they were one like 20 years ago, and the guy was going to get married. And I guess he's rich enough that his lawyer did some, I don't know why they were looking at stuff for before he got married. And the lawyer's like, hey, you're already married to this person. And both of them were like, really? And they had gotten married in Vegas and thought it was like a joke.
Oh, gee.
I just had no idea that they were legally each other for like 20 years. And I thought, that's a great idea.
Yes.
So I worked it in where, of course, in my book, the heroine just forgot she was married, amnesia related to a crime she had witnessed. But anyway, it was just really funny. So she like,
it's true.
So it was like that germ was based on the true story. So you base all your books in Mackinac Island in Michigan, and that's in the Upper Peninsula. Right.
Yes, it's where the Upper Peninsula meets the Lower Peninsula and the Straits of Mackinac and the Mackinac, the great mighty Mack Bridge is there. And it's just a beautiful island. Have you been there?
I have not. It's on my bucket list, if I had a bucket list.
Yes. Well, it's an island where to this day there are no cars.
Right.
It's just horse and buggy and bicycles. And they do use snowmobiles in the winter, but during the normal flourishing tourist season in the summer, that type of thing, it's no cars. They have emergency vehicles, but that's it. So you never see a car when you're there. So it really is that somewhere in time feeling, that movie Somewhere in Time, which is why I wrote the first book for 1979, because it plays into the story because it's being filmed.
Okay.
And my character Piper Penn becomes an extra in the movie. So that's how I starting out in 1979 and then going forward with that. The other thing was, and I kept the books in this era for a very selfish reason. I didn't want to deal with cell phones in the mystery.
Yeah.
I didn't want anyone to have access to cell phones.
Yeah.
Because it's so much easier to do things with cell phones and internet and that type of thing. And so I pushed the characters back into a time when we didn't have those conveniences. In fact, the book I'm writing now, she has to make all these long distance phone calls. So she's always got to carry a pouch of change with her and sit there and put the money in and that type of thing. And which, you know, I mean, I lived through all that era. That was normal. Yeah. So,
yeah, no, that's,
but yes, Mackinac Island is a beautiful, beautiful island. And I love it there. In fact, I'm going to sign books at the bookstore on Mackinac Island. So that'll be very exciting. But yes, all my novels will set there. And I did that for another selfish reason. I've been going for over 30 years. I absolutely love it. I love the Grand Hotel. And I didn't have to do as much research because I had been researching it unbeknownst to me for 30 years. So I still have to do some research, but I don't have, it's not like a place that I don't know. I really do know it.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes I think I need to place something here. So I have to go visit.
Yes. And that's actually a good idea too, just to go like, I'm doing research.
Yeah. I'm
in Hawaii.
Yeah. No, I tend to I'm based in Virginia. I was born in Virginia. I've lived here except for college my whole life. Happened to marry another Virginia native. Very strange. He's lived here his whole life too, which is a little bit weird because he's from Northern Virginia, which is more transient. But so I based mine in the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia, which is just lovely. So
yes, it's just easier to kind of know what you're talking about and not have to go from such raw research. I mean, there's still always research, but it's just a little easier.
It is, although it's kind of funny though, because I noticed that when you really know something, like you really know Mackinac Islands, you can say things about it that a visitor might be like, is that really true? You know, so you kind of have to do a little of that explaining in the text.
Yeah. Like
I had something in one of my novellas about, it was in December in Virginia and things were still green there, like growing. And I had someone explain that, yeah, in Virginia, we've had 70 degree Christmases. Like that is not unusual for it to be still warm and things to still not have completely lost all their green leaves. So that was kind of a funny thing.
I my next book is Being Wendy in a World Afraid to Grow Up. That's going to come out later this year. And in the book, the character goes to the library. Well, I've been to the library in Mackinac Island many, many times and been going for quite a few years. So I just looked up the library to look at it, get a little inspiration as I'm writing this library scene. Come to find out, the library wasn't there in the year that I'm writing the book, which I had no idea. I thought the library had always been where it was. It was there, but it was on a different street in a whole different area. And I had specifically was starting to describe how to get to the library from the Grand Hotel. So I was like, phew, good thing I looked.
You dodged that bullet.
Oh,
wow. We are out of time. I'm sorry to say, Michelle. So thank you for being on my show. So I want you to take one minute and describe what's one thing the listeners need to know about Being Alice.
Being Alice is about a young woman who is in a terrible accident. So her face is very deformed. So she's dealing with what is life like when half of your face is quite deformed and a lot of self-esteem issues. She also happens to be just a genius when it comes to music. So she ends up on Mackinac Island with this famous rock star, which is a kind of a fun trope too. And the really cool thing is my son is a singer-songwriter in Nashville. So I was able to take one of his songs and use it for the character song. So you can actually go listen to the song that is like the hit of the guy in there. Whereas, you know, you have to pay royalties and everything. I could never use a real person's song otherwise. So I got to use one of my son's songs for this character. So you can actually hear the song that is talked about in the book, which I think is a unique experience that you can listen to the song. So it's the story of Alice. And I like to say that the scars on her heart are deeper than the scars on her face.
Okay. That's
good. Then it's a story of redemption and accepting yourself and going forward and finding faith and seeing how that can be a great healer for you.
You have been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hamricker. And today I've been chatting with Michelle Olson and Michelle Shenowith.
Being Alice in a World Lost in the Looking Glass by Michelle Olson. 1981 has not been Alice Merrivale's cup of tea. Abruptly pushed into a contract by her scheming uncle, Alice has no choice but to sign on as the guitar and drum tech for world-renowned recording artist J.D. Grayling. Heading for the summer gig at the notorious Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island, it isn't her musical ability that consumes her with fear. Horrified at the idea of J.D., his band, and visitors to the Grand seeing her mangled face from the accident, which took her self-esteem, Alice plans to stay in the shadows. Knowing she can never fit in, her worries are enhanced when band members, one by one, mysteriously become too ill to perform. She wonders if the world is going mad, or if the truths she is learning from her new friends at the island's creative lilac shop can change the pain she feels from her past. Can Alice survive the summer working for the singer-songwriter she has idolized for years? Or is she once again headed down a rabbit hole of disappointment and betrayal?
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hamricker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhamakerfiction.com.